Obituary.
Yoshioka Masamitsu. The last surviving attacker at Pearl Harbor died on August 28th, aged 106.
As he slid into his bunk in the aircraft carrier Soryu on the night of December 6, 1941, Bombardier Yoshioka Masamitsu was struck by a thought. He didn't have much time left because tomorrow he was likely to die. He would die in Hawaii because that was where Japan has decided to hit America. Such an attack would unleash a gigantic war. Of course, it was an honor to be chosen for this mission, and his parents would be proud of him if he died that way. But he was 23, and the thought made all the blood drain from his head. Other crewmen and bombardiers might stoically turn on themselves the pistols they had been issued with in case they were captured by the enemy. He had a pistol himself, but death did not appeal to him at all. For weeks, the Imperial Japanese Navy had been building up to attack. Besides the Soryu, five other aircraft carriers had gathered in the Kuril Islands with more than 300 warplanes. Emperor Hirohito had ordered on November 5th that if talks with the Americans broke down, America should be attacked by the end of the month. The talks concerned an oil embargo by the Americans on Japan to deter it from military adventures in Asia. 2 years before, Yoshioka had been deployed on the Soryu against the Chinese nationalists who were resisting Japanese conquest. But that was a regional war. What threatened now was something even bigger. Before dawn, having slept at least a little, he went out on deck to watch the torpedo being loaded onto his plane. It was still dark, but the missile gleamed silver. That made him realize it was the real thing. In training, because torpedoes were scarce and expensive, they had used wooden canisters with a warhead filled with water, not explosives. After every drop, they fished them from the sea again. The torpedoes themselves were much less important than learning how to fly fast, flat, and low above the sea, sometimes as low as 12 meters, getting the angle just right before releasing them. Now they would be dropped on America, specifically on the Pacific Fleet, moored at Shinjuan, or Pearl Harbor. That information had filtered to him and his comrades extremely slowly. Just before they sailed from the Kuril Islands on November 26th, they were told to pack shorts. That seemed to mean they were going south, but then the pipes were lagged with asbestos, which suggested somewhere colder. In the bar and at deck smoking breaks, he and his comrades speculated constantly. He himself had been switched quite suddenly that year from navigation to torpedo training, so deployment was imminent somewhere. But it couldn't be America, because America, up until recently, still supplied the petrol for their planes. With a stiff east wind and choppy seas, he climbed into his craft. It was a Nakajima B-5N2, much better than the rickety old biplanes he had spent his time repairing when, at 18, he first joined up. Day after day he would enviously watch as the airmen flew off in newer models. The Nakajima, though, was no more airtight than most of the planes of the time. Gaps all over the body let in the disgusting firework smell of gunpowder or anti-aircraft fire. Roaring engine noise and the echoing wind drowned out almost all other sound, except the worst of all, the bang of his plane being hit. Added to all this, the 800 kilograms weight of a real torpedo made his plane tip to the rear. He was so burdened on takeoff that he sank at first 2 meters below deck level before he could get the nose up and away. He, his pilot, and his rear gunner flew steadily to the east. They were in radio silence, with him as navigator calculating the route by the flight time, 110 minutes, distance, 220 nautical miles, and the position of the Soryu as they left. Otherwise, they flew into the glare of the sun. That glare changed to towering white cumulus clouds, then to billowing black smoke from American ships that had already been hit. He sent his torpedo down, and looking back, saw two slim columns of spray shoot 30 meters from the water, a direct hit, right on target. Then he saw something else. The battleship, which was already listing, had no barrels on the gun turrets. It was the USS Utah, a training ship which had been stripped of its weapons a decade before. During torpedo training, he and his comrades had been told to memorize the silhouette of the Utah so that they could avoid it. Somehow, sun-dazzled perhaps, he had not. His elation turned, in an instant, to horror at his mistake. He got back safely that day. War had now started between Japan and America, and would last for 4 years. But he had a lucky one. When the Soryu was sunk at the Battle of Midway in 1942, he was on shore leave. When fighting became intense round the Palau Islands, he was recovering from malaria. His plane was grounded, short of parts, when kamikaze tactics came in. Enemy bullets streamed towards his plane once, heading for his face, but passed by on either side. His plane was pierced by cannon fire, but it hit none of the crew, and the fuel tank it struck was empty. He never took such luck for granted, nor stopped being scared. He increasingly felt shame, though, that he had survived. And not merely survived, but to a great age, still straight-backed, lucid, mobile and dapper. For decades he worked in the Maritime Self-Defense Force, the post-war version of the Emperor's proud navy, and he remained unceasingly, though silently, aware of all who had died around him. His brothers in arms, of course, but also the sailors they had killed, young men, like him, faithfully carrying out their orders. 58 crew had died when he torpedoed the Utah. If he ever visited Pearl Harbor, which he doubted he would, as he wouldn't know what to say, he wanted to visit their graves to pay his respects. As it was, he added them to his prayers at the Yasukuni Shrine, with the fervent hope that there would be no more wars.